Productive and reliable temporary staff to your business. We supply temps across Kent within food production, fulfillment houses, picking and packing environments, and warehouse staff. With great value for money charge rates, error-free invoicing, and highly trained consultants. Shouldn't Temp Network be supporting your business? For more information, please contact us on 01892 531 777 or visit tempnetwork.co.uk.
Channel Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Who Cares Wins. Yay. On Channel Radio. Date is Monday and it's the 8th of July.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
You can hear in the background, that's Angela Breyer-Stevenson.
Hello, Angela. Everybody. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Sounds fine. And my name is Jan Mulligan. Welcome to the show. We have a special guest with us today, Frances Beaumont of Dyspraxia UK.
Hi.
Hello. But before we do, just want to send a big think out to our colleague, Sue Parker.
Love and hugs.
Sue, hope you're sitting somewhere in the shade, resting. Feet up. I would say Pim's in hand, but maybe a cup of tea. Bit of extra sugar somewhere.
Yeah, something, but resting and chilling easy. And we miss you.
Tweet us if you can. If not, you can give us abuse later.
Yeah.
Okay, so as I mentioned, Frances Beaumont from Dyspraxia UK is with us in the studio today. And Frances is going to tell us all about being an OT, but in special subject is dyspraxia. Maybe a term that's new to many of our listeners. So
Frances and Angela.
Oh, yes. So we're all going to learn something today. So welcome, Frances, again.
Thank you very much.
Before we get on to dyspraxia, maybe we could just give our listeners a bit of background about yourself, how you became an OT, how you discovered dyspraxia.
Yeah, well, a long time ago I trained, and it was different in those days. Nowadays it's an BSc Hons course, and it's all a very intense course. It really was when I was training as well, but it was a diploma in those days. And I went straight from school at the age of 17 into an OT college. And I had a very varied career in my life, including doing a year's VSO in Africa, which I really enjoyed.
Africa? VSO is voluntary service?
Voluntary service overseas.
Ah, right.
And I did that when I was about 21.
Wow.
It's quite a life-changing experience for me.
Yeah.
That got me working with children, and when I came back to the UK, I did some more paediatrics and got interested in that area of work. I also trained as an art teacher, and I probably would have done that right at the beginning from school, but in those days you had to have a maths O-level, which I didn't get. And they said, oh no, you can't be a teacher if you haven't got a maths O-level. So I gave up the idea of being an art teacher or an artist at that time. But later on I was able to bring it back into my life. And oh gosh, it's such a long journey from there to where I am now. I worked quite a lot in the NHS and in social services, quite a lot in Kent, East Kent.
Local lass.
That's right, I'm a local girl. And about 1992, I decided to leave the NHS. My kids were grown up and I could take a bit of a risk with my employment, and decided to become an independent occupational therapist.
And that's still quite rare, isn't it?
It's not that common. I mean, you get a lot of independent physiotherapists, but not very many independent occupational therapists. That is changing now. I think some more coming online, but in those days it was fairly uncommon. And I did some more training, and I became a specialist in the medico-legal report writing for people who had quite serious accidents and illnesses.
Should have talked to you earlier, Frances. Maybe just before you go further, for somebody who may not have heard the term occupational therapist,
yes.
Is there a nutshell description?
It is difficult to put it into a sentence because it is a very varied job, but basically you're helping people with disabilities or illnesses to live as independently as possible in their lives. And that could be a congenital illness for a child, it could be a head injury later on in life, could be a stroke, could be old age and difficulties there.
Road accidents.
Definitely. mental health, physical health problems, children's problems. You know, really covers a huge gamut. And so and work problems. That's what I got much more interested in later on in life as well.
Right. And presumably that gives the split between the NHS and the independent OT, occupational therapist OT, because most people would think about those conditions being life conditions. Mm-hmm. And then, as you've said, the specialism might be the work, or as we're going to go on to talk about, the dyspraxia side of things. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. There are some OTs using their skills in work, but the independent sector is actually much more innovative.
Right.
They aren't constrained by the NHS. And unfortunately, with the cuts coming in, many, many more OTs are finding their work is very limited and they're getting de-skilled. Mm-hmm. And I think the independent OTs, if they've managed to survive, have gone on and been the innovators and have been risking, like I have in fact, risked new things.
Mm. So your big risk was dyspraxia.
Big risk was dyspraxia.
Amongst all the other things, why dyspraxia?
Well, I have a good friend called Margaret Scott, who's manager of student support services at Canterbury Christ Church University. And she came to me one day and said, look, I think I need an OT. We've got some students who are bright. We know they haven't got dyslexia. We've tested them for that, but they're actually still failing at university. And I need an occupational therapist to help me. And I looked at her and thought, well, I'll have a try. And it literally was starting at the bottom, researching, right. Asking people, reading up about it, and found there was nobody else really doing this work. And I assessed the first two students and gave them advice, and they got through the courses. So the university employed me again, and it grew slowly from there. That was about 9 years ago. And now I have an UK-wide business employing associate occupational therapists are all doing this work, not only in universities but in the workplace, and also increasingly with children, because the NHS is not really able to cope with the numbers that they're getting.
Mm. And dyspraxia.
What is it?
Yeah. How long have we got?
Very shortly. It is a complex and subtle neurological condition which is present from birth. That's an important feature of it. It's not that you were fine until you were six and fell off a wall and then suddenly started having difficulties. Now, this is something from birth onwards, like your hair colour or your eye colour. It's how you're born, how you're wired up. It's different from lots of other people, but there are some positive things in the differences as well, I think. It varies in severity from mild to quite severe, and isn't present in surprising numbers, between about 7 to 8% of the population. So in a class of 30 children, you're going to have two or three who have dyspraxia to some extent. And it's quite easy to find them if you know what you're looking for. If you've got a group of kids out in the playground and the teacher says to them, Harry and Johnny, will you pick teams to play football? The last two or three children that get picked are the ones that have got the dyspraxia, because the kids know perfectly well they can't run very quickly, they can't change speed, can't catch a ball as quick as the others. And also they tend to have slower and laboured handwriting because the muscles don't coordinate as well.
So it's from my understanding, then it's neurological, something in your neuro pathways in the brain, in
that's
the mind,
right.
Is it?
Yes, that's
so
right.
I'm still thinking, if it's present from birth, it's in me now, mm-hmm. How would I know I've got it?
Well, you'd know if you've had, it's really by the symptoms, so what difficulties have you had in your life, really. Mm-hmm. If you have struggled a lot at school with writing, you've been slower than other people. If you've been slower learning to dress and walk, even some children find they're slower to learn to speak. So it's the milestones in very early life. Your parents would have probably picked it up. Mm. And at school, you'd have probably been underachieving. So though you'd be bright and very creative, you may actually be coasting along in the middle of the class or somewhere near the bottom, when in fact you could be doing that much better.
Okay.
That's why, is it that a lot of kids in school are diagnosed superficially with dyslexia, when actually that may be correct, but they may have either in addition dyspraxia, or actually dyspraxia may be
the main thing.
Diagnosis.
Yeah, it is often confused with dyslexia. Dyslexia is a specific difficulty with language, understanding language, and so the difficulty with reading and spelling, and then the difficulty with writing comes from that, in the sense that they get letters muddled up and back to front. But dyspraxia, the difficulty in handwriting, is very much a physically writing. Right. So they're gripping the pen really, really tightly, almost going through the page. There's a terrific effort to write, and it's very slow. Also because it affects the muscles of the eyes very often, in that they don't converge properly. For example, you don't get binocular vision very well. It's quite difficult for children to look up to a board, blackboard, copy what's on there, see what's on there, focus on that, and then focus down on the desk and then get their hand to do what they wanted to do. So handwriting, copying from the blackboard, though it seems to the teacher maybe it's the easiest thing they could give the children, it's a real struggle for children with dyspraxia to do that. So then they get very slow and they get behind, and people get cross with them and they think they're being lazy, and in fact they're really trying very hard.
Interesting, because also there must be very finite between, as you say, are they being lazy?
Yeah.
Are they like, can't be bothered? Or are they, you know, really struggling but don't want to open up and admit that they're struggling? Because, you know, a lot of children are like, no, I'm fine.
Mm.
Yeah,
and, that's right.
And they'll put it off as something else, because I think sometimes you do get the abusive or the...
The teasing,
you know, because they don't want to draw attention, they draw it in another way.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yes, that often there's a behavioural problems because the kids do know that they are slower, and they know that often they're quite bright, they feel they understand everything, but they're just very frustrated that they can't. You do get sometimes behavioural problems, and also there are some difficulties sometimes with social life. You know, the kids tend to get isolated and can often be on their own at school unless there's some positive help from the teacher and understanding. These kids are great. You know, I really, really pleased to be working with people with dyspraxia, because often they're so kind, and they're often very, very empathetic, very creative, and can sort of really see to the nub of something, get to the root of it without all the, you know, the edgy parts, all the fiddly bits. You just get on and say it how it is, and can be quite direct, which is quite refreshing, actually.
Now, we're going to be talking about the assessment side of things and how one gets diagnosed and the sort of help that's available. But before we get that, we've been talking about children, and we were talking one day, and you said that an adult, there's a view from GPs and from other professionals that you should grow out of dyspraxia. Well, and once you stop laughing... you explain to me how it can carry on being missed. And...
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I'm afraid that is a very unfortunate to hear that story, but I do hear it when adults go to their GP and say, I've got dyspraxia and I think I need an assessment. And sometimes, unfortunately, GPs will say, haven't you grown out of it yet? This is a very old view that it used to be called a clumsy child syndrome, as if it would end when you became a child and you needn't worry about it too much. But we know perfectly well now that it carries on just as well as dyslexia does into your adult life. And the difficulties adults have are actually sometimes more difficulties than when you're a child, because you're faced with more problems at work, for example.
Yeah.
Things like organisation are actually very difficult for people with dyspraxia. Not only do they find it difficult to organise the words in their head to write them down, but they actually find organising their daily life quite difficult. And so they may be late, they may be in a muddle, they may have lost things. I'm sure you know people like that in the place you work, or you know someone in your family, or even yourself, who has all these additional difficulties. Well, another hidden difficulty is an extreme sensitivity, and it seems to be that children with dyspraxia have this, and they don't grow out of it unless they really have some help from a specialist occupational therapist. For example, people might be highly sensitive to noise, much more so than the average person. So to be working in a call centre, say, they really find that terribly stressful, the volume of noise, the racket going on, all the different conversations and so on. Or light, you know, touch is another thing. People just don't want to be touched, or want to be touched in a very firm way rather than a light way.
That's interesting, because I'm thinking about those that are looking, when you go back to the children area, of looking at careers and options and career path, whether or not children may decide, oh, I can't do that job because of, if they don't know they've got dyspraxia, would they necessarily think, oh, well, I'm not deemed to be in that area because I'm not talented enough? Or especially if it's more physical, I presume, if it's muscle memory and coordination. And actually, maybe knowing this and having the help in the assessment, they might still be able to do that dream job. career.
Yeah, I think people with dyspraxia can pretty well do most things, but they tend to need a longer practice period. Mm. They often find difficulty in driving, for example, because that's quite a multi-skilled thing, all that coordination. Some find they can drive an automatic car, but not a manual. And others will just practice and practice and practice, and they will get there. And of course, there are some that just can't do it, feel they just got to give up. So driving is a complex coordination difficulty some adults have, and that can stop you doing some jobs if you can't drive, or if you get lost when you're driving, because that's another area of spatial awareness is often quite poor. And people with dyspraxia can get quite lost even in their own building sometimes, which of course other people find hilarious, because they think, gosh, you've just written an amazing essay, or you've just been so clever about something, and how can you get lost coming from A to B when you've done it three times this week already? And it's because they're not always noticing their environment.
And buildings these days are like Alice in Wonderland anyway.
Every floor looks the same, all the colours are the same.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I think on that note, it's probably a good time to take a bit of a break with some music. Mm. And our first track has actually been chosen by Frances.
Mm. So I feel like I'm on Desert Island Disc.
We're much better looking.
Yeah. Well, you only get the one disc to take with you. And your chosen disc is Be Still My Heart, which is the Finlandia hymn.
Be Still My Soul.
My Soul, I'm sorry. And we've picked a version here by Catherine Jenkins. So we hope you enjoy this,
beautiful.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Still my soul, the Lord is on thy side. Be patient in the cross of grief or pain. Leave to thy God to order and
Channel Radio. And welcome back to Who Cares Wins.
Oh, beautiful piece of music, Francis. What made I'm you horizontal that? Now.
In a nice, relaxed way.
Yes.
What made you choose that?
I love the words, and I think if I'm in a really busy place, everything's dashing around me. If I can just get to that sort of quiet place in myself, then I feel I can focus on the person I'm working with better.
Excellent. Mm. So, just before the break, we were talking about the difference between adults and children. And that brings us neatly on, because we said that it's difficult for an adult to get assessed or to be taken seriously with an assessment. So maybe you could start off with the route to assessment. So the typical route would be a child at school.
That's the ideal time, to get a child about the age of five at school and find a really good team in your child development centre through the NHS. It was a free service. If you're lucky, you will find that team and get that help at that stage. But as we know, there are many reasons why children get missed or get misdiagnosed sometimes. And many, many adults, in my experience, especially older adults, because there never was a service at all for them at school, there was nothing available, are now coming forward thinking they might have dyspraxia. And so very often it's a late diagnosis that people are getting.
And in terms of free service at school, that implies that after school one has to pay.
Unfortunately.
What are their funding sources?
Well, this is a really sad thing, that the NHS will pay up to a certain age, and it does vary in different areas. I think around Maidstone, as far as I know, in Kent, it's up to the age of about 10.
Wow.
And after that, it's very young.
It's very young.
So if you're going to secondary school, you've got dyspraxia, you're not likely to get any help at all after that age.
That's a shame.
It does vary across the country.
That's sort of even more key, isn't it?
Some areas are really good, like the Outer Hebrides. they take children right.
We can take Who Cares Wins up there if you like.
Yeah, I think we need to. But they see children right from birth to 18 or 19. They get to college, but that's an exceptional service up there. But unfortunately, locally, a lot of children don't get seen. So it's up to adults to find out, get some help before they go to university. Is a really good time to get some help, because you can then be qualified for the Disabled Students Allowance, or DSA, and that's worth about £6,000 to you, not in money, but in equipment, in extra time in exams, extra tutorials. It's really, really valuable to help you get through the course. So that's a very good time to get assessed if you haven't got assessed before. Another good time is when you're looking for work, because you can get some help from the Job Centre Plus, and sometimes they will pay for assessments. Occasionally GPs will, and increasingly I'm glad to say GPs are saying, realising it's very iniquitous that you can get a service up to the age of 10 and after that you can't get it. I can't think of any other thing, can you, Jan, any other condition where there's an age limit like that. If you had cancer and you were 10 and you couldn't get treatment, people would be pretty cross about
people up in arms, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. And it comes back to the, it's your age. Well, actually, it's not relevant, isn't it? I mean, we've got this whole age discrimination for employment. Yeah. So surely it needs to link across and be joined up thinking to the healthcare side.
I would absolutely love it. You know, it'd make me so happy if the NHS would offer this service. I wouldn't need to be doing my job anymore.
we still need you, Francis. Yes. Surely there'd be some way of, specialism. Because I presume you must be able to offer the schools, or maybe this is bigger thinking, that secondary schools could offer some sort of, assessment. So you presumably would have to work with the schools, but the schools could offer it to recognise that, I don't know, around options age or choosing careers or part of their careers advisory service. I'm off thinking now, see?
Yeah,
you see these big bubbles.
Yeah,
above my
head. See the bubbles. see those empty bubbles.
They're all bursting everywhere.
As a business, and just back to UK, we have actually started working and employing paediatric OTs. They're trained as paediatric OTs to work with children. I started with adults because there was this big, huge black hole and nobody was doing adults. But we found increasingly we're getting phone calls and our requests from desperate parents who say, we cannot get our child assessed. Could you see them? And we were very happy to do that.
Brilliant.
But most of our work is with older people. And I say older, 17,
18. Above 10.
Senior citizens.
People in work, or people out of work, people unemployed. Sometimes people who've been employed all their life but struggled all their life, and they just want to know, they think they have dyspraxia, quite a few teachers I get that they come through and they say, you know, I think I've got dyspraxia, and you assess them and they say, oh, that's a relief, I realise why life's been so difficult. And then the thing that would help them most would you actually drop their hours a bit and say work three days a week, and they're as happy as anything on that. But it was just such a struggle to work full time.
And you mentioned earlier that being an independent OT is quite a unique situation, but then your business, Dyspraxia UK, is unique in itself. And there's several strains of uniqueness about you.
Well, uniqueness.
No, there are uniqueness. I don't want to be so completely
unique. Very unique, because unique is unique.
Yeah. Well, I'm not completely unique as an independent OT. There are several thousand of us now. But I think the business that I'm running now is unique, and I think sort of three main reasons, I think. One is that we offer really high-quality training to other occupational therapists to become our associates. And well, we only train experienced OTs in the first place, so they must have had at least 5 years' experience and be familiar with working with children, paediatrics or neurology, so they need that background. And we offer 3 days' training, one day of which is completely unique. We ask our ex-clients to come back and be volunteers for the OT training, who's been training, and they have to pretend they don't know if they've got dyspraxia or not, and the OTs have to go through the whole testing process with them and write a report on them.
But what an experience. It's a bit like surgeons practicing on bodies.
Doing a live heart transplant, but under supervision in the way as well. Yeah. But it has to be done, yeah, presumably.
Absolutely. We're so grateful to the volunteers who come back, our clients, because they enrich the process, and it's so fascinating to hear their stories as well, because they do share their stories with the whole group. And they also find a lot of benefit from sharing it with the others, so they realise they're not alone. And many, you know, some friendships have occurred through that. So that's one way we're unique, and that we do this training involving volunteers, and there's no other training for this in the UK that I'm aware of. Our next training is on the 26th, 27th and 28th of September, and we have a few places left for OTs with that relevant experience. Secondly, I think we offer a completely unique range of standardised testing and screenings on people. So we cover not only dyspraxia, but we also screen for ADHD.
Which is?
Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder.
Thank you. We're going to test all your acronyms today.
It's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah. Or it can be ADD, Attention Deficit Disorder. But basically, children and adults find it very hard to stay concentrated on things. And find it difficult to learn for that reason. We also do screening for dyslexia and Asperger's syndrome, which is quite common that people with Asperger's have dyspraxia as well. That's so common that some people say it's actually part of Asperger's to have the dyspraxic tendencies.
And just briefly for our listeners, Asperger's, I know, not saying that you need to be an expert in it, but the overlap that you would sort of similarities between?
Well, the overlap is that most people with Asperger's have dyspraxia as well, so they actually have a double whammy, really. And the Asperger's aspect is much more a social side, where they find it really difficult to relate to other people and perhaps empathise with other people.
Right.
They tend to get very fixed on certain interests and have quite a limited range of interests, but they're very, very knowledgeable about those things. So we do find a lot of overlaps. We find we have to test for all, screen for all, everything to make sure that we really cover it, because a lot of some other tests, say by psychologists, and I'm certainly not running psychologists down, but they tend to be much more narrow in what they're looking for.
And presumably, again, you can have the struggle in learning, but it could be nothing to do with Asperger's. But by going through those tests and going through that with you, we can actually then dig, you know, deeper or maybe it's not about the dyspraxia, but it's just generally your learning style, for example.
That's right. We also test for sensory profile. And I know I've shared that with both of you now.
I've got mine to do.
Yeah, I know Jan's done hers in the past. This is a very interesting test to do. And when I first started, and when Margaret Scott first asked me to start, I was desperately looking around for anything with the word adult in it, because there were no tests for adults at all. And it said adult sensory profile. And to my great surprise, it's proved absolutely invaluable, because nearly everybody has quite an interesting and unique sort of pattern of very high sensory sensitivity and rather high levels of not noticing their environment. And this sort of pattern is fairly unusual, but we keep finding it over and over again in people with dyspraxia. And actually, the sensory profile is what's giving them the biggest problem at work when they are in environments they find very stressful. And we also
it's an interesting test to do whether you have dyspraxia or not.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because it can confirm some of your instinctive feelings about situations. You say, oh, well, that's why I don't like roller coasters or discos or whatever it might be, because your test shows that you've got a high sensitivity to noise or to thrill or to whatever. And then low sensitivity to others is why you're attracted to other things.
Mm.
And it can help just either rubber stamp and say, oh, well, it's okay to be me.
That's right.
This has shown me why I'm the way I am.
Yeah.
Or it might open up doors to say, well, maybe I ought to explore this direction a little bit more because this seems to be my comfort zone.
I'm all out for anything that raises awareness about us, as you mentioned earlier, that pre-wired bit, Francis. Mm. If it can raise awareness, it's not that excuse of, oh, well, I'm like this, so tough.
Mm.
Actually, this is who I am. I'm understanding myself much better.
Mm.
And with the help of people like Francis and others, you're actually looking at exploring those options of the true potential of what they want to be and what they want to do.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Another one of our special tests that we use is called Beery VMI, which is a visual motor integration, and that we look at vision and motor coordination. For example, hand-eye coordination, that sort of thing. And that's...
I wondered what that was when it had Beery.
Beery.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Alcohol. Mine's draft.
Nothing to do with drink. And Jan, you asked me about the unique quality of our business. I think the third thing is, really, we are the only specialist occupational therapy services in the UK, as far as I'm aware, in the world, and that offers this help to adults with dyspraxia.
Well, that's a challenge to the world.
Yeah,
if
that's
the world is listening,
yep.
If there's another service out there, we'd like to pair you
would.
Up.
We would.
Yeah. I'm sure you could collaborate.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we do reach out to the world. I've just recently done a Skype assessment to somebody in India.
Excellent.
We have a listener in India. Hello, India, when you listen in.
And we're very happy to do Skype assessments all around the world. So that's an area that we're growing in, really. So,
perfect segue to our next piece of music for two reasons.
Yes.
Partly because the title is The World is What You Make It.
Yes.
And linking back to what Angela said, if you can understand yourself, you can then move forward and take the world on your own terms. So this song is about make the world. The world is what you make it, even.
Called Hannibal, rocket, roll it, send it down the avenue. Went out to see the Roman Empire fall.
Uh-huh.
2,000 elephants and gold chain mail.
Take it, shake it, make it what you wanna be.
Them Roman legionnaires, they hit the trail.
Uh-huh.
Telling you,
the world is what you make it. The world is what you make it.
Lived in Egypt's land. Jumped down, turned around, looked on what the monkey did. She went to find herself a mighty man.
Uh-huh.
And come Antonio from Italy. Let the sun shine through.
Uh-huh.
There ain't no happy time without no pain. Heartbreak, new day.
the road again. The world is what you make it. The world is what you make it, baby. The world is what you make it.
Welcome back.
Yay. It's definitely what you make it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, as with all conditions, if I can use that term, there are members of the public and also famous people with dyspraxia.
Mm-hmm.
So, Francis, can you tell us a few?
Well, I think maybe the most famous one is Einstein, who was well known for being extremely forgetful. He even forgot where he lived, and he had to have a little label inside his coat saying where he lived so he'd get home. And also he couldn't tie his shoelaces even as an adult. So I think he had lots of other things as well. I think he might have had Asperger's too, but he had dyspraxia, definitely. And my favourite one is Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter.
Harry Potter fame.
He's been very open about his dyspraxia and talked about how he's overcome some of the things and how they had to make some special arrangements on the set for him as well.
Fantastic.
Then there's famous writers, lots of writers, as Emily and Charlotte Bronte, Jack Kerouac. Seems to be very... an awful lot of authors are dyspraxic and lots of creative people.
So whilst there are barriers, there are ways of overcoming those barriers.
Absolutely.
Or accepting some barriers to find other routes.
Yeah.
And we're going to be talking about in a little minute about how to get an assessment from you or from your colleagues. But I'd just like to raise that I assessed a gentleman who is currently studying for a high degree in particle physics. So, total brain box.
Wow.
But he had already been diagnosed, so he knew he had dyspraxia.
Oh, right.
What he now needed was funding to support him while he was studying. So, absolute brain box. I felt very inferior talking to him.
Oh, Jan.
He was incredible. He was totally...
Do you need a hug?
No, fine, thank you.
Oh, no touch.
But he couldn't get to classes on time. He couldn't attend any training seminars. He was late for exams.
Wow.
His timetables, his deadlines, completely out the window. But you ask him a question on his topic, shutting him up was very difficult.
Wow.
So
I know that feeling.
Once one's got the diagnosis, then that opens the doors to other forms of funding and support, such as the Disabled Students Allowance, as Francis mentioned, and also access to work.
That's
if
right.
You're in employment.
Yes.
But the important thing for both of those funding streams is you need the diagnosis first.
Absolutely crucial, yes.
So if somebody's sitting out there thinking, either for themselves, a member of the family or a friend,
Or employees.
Mm-hmm. So if you've got a generous employer who's willing to pay for that assessment in the first place, what's their first step?
I think the first step is to go to our website. That's www.dyspraxiauk.com, because on there's a quiz for different ages. So you go to the adult quiz or the child quiz and have a look at it. It's a very short one. It just gives you an idea if you get more than half of the questions. You may there's a strong possibility you have dyspraxia, so it gives you a sort of clue about it. And then contact us through the website with some more details about where you live, what your age is, what the problems are, and then we will contact you back either by email or phone to discuss the problem. If you decide to go ahead with an assessment, that costs varies from £650 for an adult to £750 for a child, because we've got more detail and we have to liaise with the school more.
Mm-hmm.
If someone needs an assessment for themselves and in work, that's like two assessments together, that's £950, and often work will pay for that. But we are offering some cheaper assessments for people perhaps who have a diagnosis. They don't need to have the whole diagnosis, the whole assessment done. So if people are very interested in what their sensory profile is, we're offering that at £200 now, and I'm very willing to have a special offer through the radio station for the next month, which normally is £200. We'll offer £150 if you quote. Who cares wins?
Where's my pen?
Are you listening, listeners?
Yes.
So did you get that? Sensory profile normally would cost you £200. If you contact Dyspraxia OK in the month of July and quote "Who cares wins" when you make your inquiry, that £200 will be reduced to £150.
That's right. And if you decide to go ahead and have the full assessment later on, there'll be a reduction on that because part of it's done already. So that we'd be very happy to do that for you. And that assessment will include discussion over the phone or Skype about your results, so you'll get a very good idea of what, you know, your sensory profile is and how you can help yourself. Excellent. With that. But I'm very excited to be doing work with people in work, so HR are coming to us increasing numbers now before there are any problems, hopefully, and getting assessments, which gives them some guidance on what are reasonable adjustments. Now, people can get reasonable adjustments if they have a diagnosis of dyspraxia or any other neurodiverse condition, but often don't know what those reasonable adjustments are.
Sure.
So the diagnosis and our assessment really very clearly shows what the reasonable adjustments would be to help them, and also access to work can be called in at this stage. And this is absolutely brilliant thing because it's free to the employer, and it can include as much as having a support worker for some part of your work. It can include doing different parts of your job, somebody else in the work doing some of what you do and you doing some of what they do, or can mean moving desks so that, for example, you're not right under a neon light by a door, by a photocopier, and putting yourself in a much more calmer situation to do your work. So there's a wide variety of things that can be done to help. Some of them are very simple and don't cost anything, but you just need to know what they are for an individual person. They're not the same for everybody.
And I think that part about assessment of not only for the employees, the employers out there listening in, again, sometimes they are frightened about cost and time and effort, about, oh, am I going to have to buy a special chair or move them and I haven't got the space in the office? But also it's the opposite of the actual employee being able to take responsibility and do certain things for themselves that actually the employer doesn't have to, you know, be involved in, but by that employee just changing something in their routine, their travel to work, whatever it is, that they can actually be happier, more positive, and more productive.
Absolutely, Angela, you've got it absolutely right.
Yes, yay! Yeah. I win.
And what you've got there from that assessment process, and it's quite different from, say, for example, you think you've got repetitive strain injury. So you take yourself off to the doctor, who may diagnose you or may send you for tests. And several months later, you may or may not get a diagnosis. But then you need to take that information back to work, and the work need to decide to call in somebody else to look at your workplace. With the Dyspraxia UK service, you've got the, from start to finish, you've got the diagnosis, then you've got the reasonable adjustments, and then you've got, if you've booked a workplace assessment, you've got the visit to the workplace.
That's right.
To look at that again.
Yes. So it's quick.
At first sight, the fee might be quite high, but what you've got is one-stop shop. Mm-hmm. With all of those answers there.
That's right.
I think that's the important thing. That's the unique again.
That's right. Yes.
Another unique.
Yes.
And you mentioned earlier before coming on the show that there's a charity you're involved in.
Yeah, well, we because of the work we're doing, we're finding that a lot of people fall in between all sorts of stools and they just cannot afford to have assessments. These may be people who, for example, are on very low wages, so they're actually in work, so they can't claim help from Job Centre Plus because they're actually in work. They may be absolutely struggling on a part-time low wage and have nothing extra to pay for an assessment with, and yet they know they need it because they want to get a better job or they want to work more full-time. And we keep coming across people who say, I'd love to have an assessment, I know I need one and I cannot get it. We do encourage them to go to the GPs, and as I said earlier, this is increasingly being understood by GPs as perhaps a role they have. This is a neurological condition, and there's no help within the NHS for it. So increasingly hope that GPs will be able to fund these, but sometimes they say, no way, Jose, we're not going to do this. So they really feel very stumped and I think rather failed by the whole system. And we see this need quite often, and occurred to me, what could we do anything about it? And we decided the only way we could do something was to set up a charity to raise money so that for research, because that's urgently needed as well, research into our work and research into what is effective treatment for adults, but also to help give bursaries to individuals who've proved that they've been to the GP and been turned down. Every other route they've tried, they've been turned down, and they haven't very much income. Mm. And a bursary towards the cost of the assessment could be given. And so we are trying, and this is called Action for Dyspraxia. We're just setting it up now, and we'd love to hear from people who are interested in helping us with that.
So any sort of fundraising, either ideas or
absolutely.
Being somebody that can fundraise for you or being absolutely. Involved in whatever you're offering. So you heard it here, listeners. Get on there now.
Yeah,
contact her.
We need some fundraisers urgently.
Yeah, we'll be posting all of Frances's details onto our Facebook and various other social media.
And that
pages.
Offer.
And that offer.
Yeah, and we'll tweet that out as well for
absolutely.
You.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. So we're going for our next piece of music, and this one... Angela was in the Desert Island hot chair for this one.
I was today, yes. There's a completely unrelated link, well, I don't know, maybe there is, with dyspraxia, when we'll come back to that one. But it's actually, my mum and dad met today in 1950.
Wow.
So, although, bless him, he's not here anymore. So, yes, this is for them.
Excellent.
Radio.
Wow, very relaxed after
yes,
that.
Yes, yes, and breathe.
So, Frances, thank you so much for your time today.
It's been a pleasure.
Before we go, I know there's a couple of books you'd like to point people to if they want to find out a little bit more.
Yes, if you want to read any more about this, if you're a parent and you've like to get some more information, a really good book is called Developmental Dyspraxia by Madeline Portwood. And for people who are adults or want to know more about adult dyspraxia, there's a really good book called Developmental Coordination Disorder in Adults by Sharon Drew.
And we'll pop both of those onto Facebook.
You see, she's got some jargon in. Developmental Coordination Disorder, DCD.
That's a good one. That's right, we like that one.
But do do email us at inquiries@dyspraxiauk.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Fab.
And we have a helpline as well, but we'll tell you about that if you email us. And look on the website, and we'll just look forward to hearing from you.
Brilliant. Excellent.
Thank you very much, Frances.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And now, as regulars know, we have our event slot.
We do. Dun, da, da. Da-da. Hot off the press from the Faversham tweet up this morning, where we had a
great turnout
with catering for Kent, Hilda Marie and Ken Lloyd. And also the Anne Robertson Centre. Those of you that know Pilgrim's Hospice in Canterbury, they have their new Anne Robertson Centre, which has training rooms. And so next Wednesday, just to remind you all, if you want to come and meet us, the Who Cares Wins team, we'll be there. And it's the pop-up tweet-up in collaboration with the Kent Business Tweet-Up. And so come along. It's at the Anne Robertson Centre. It's Wednesday the 17th of July, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. So it's a slightly different time to the other tweet-ups. If you want to come along, email wendy.kelk, K-E-L-K, at pilgrimshospices.org, or go on to the kentbusinesstweetup.co.uk website and you'll find all the details and the location and the time on there. So that's next Wednesday. We'll remind people next Monday as well. Those of you that want to do any more with the yoga side, reminding you that the family yoga morning in Ramsgate with Lucia of More Than Yoga is this... Yes, this coming Saturday, isn't it? 13th.
It is.
Lucky for some. This coming Saturday, 13th of July, 11 till 12, and it's a yoga workshop for the family. So it's a chance to experience the energy of yoga and the quiet time of relaxation as togetherness. So you've got parents, grandparents, uncles, aunties, anyone wishing to share the gift of yoga with a little one or two. So contact morethanyogastudio@gmail.com. And finally... We were talking to Deborah Mulvaney, and some of you may also know Caroline Love, who is also another coach. They have collaborated and they are doing a Choose to Make the Rest of Your Life the Best of Your Life. It's a day, 27th of July. It's another Saturday. Arrive at 9:30, leave at 5:30.
And it's a day.
Well, yes, you can do. But it's a whole day event. There are limited places, so do contact them. Email Deborah. That's Deborah at shapingwellness.com. And you can find out more information, I'm sure, on her website or Caroline Love. And that's Caroline at carolinelove.co.uk.
Excellent. Just a heads up on a couple of shows on Channel Radio later today. At 6 o'clock, we have the Big Band Show with Roger Jeffries.
Woohoo!
At 7 o'clock, we have the wonderful voice of Conrad.
Oh, yeah, Conrad.
Grown Up Folks Groove Show. And that's
he does it better than you, Jan.
I know he does. Okay, at 9 o'clock,
Ambry,
we have Stuart and Saffa's Revolutions.
Yay!
So they're all coming up later. You can, of course, listen to Who Cares Wins
again
at your leisure through the Listen Again facility, both on Channel Radio and on other websites.
And don't forget, we're like the BBC now. We're repeated on Thursdays
at
3 o'clock. So you know,
you can't miss us, folks. If you want to listen, there are facilities out there. Now, on next week's show, our special guest is John Tipping, the dyslexic entrepreneur. So, dyspraxia
this week,
dyslexia next week. And his motto is, life through the eyes of a dyslexic. He cannot read, he cannot write, but he has produced a book.
He has written a book, he runs a very successful business, he gives good hugs.
Oh, I don't know that. I'll have to prove that one next week, maybe. But he is a very successful business owner.
Yes, he is.
He's the blind man. He can see. He puts blinds up, but he also does UV filters at windows, all sorts of, if your windows need care for whatever reason, then John is your man.
But yeah,
he'll be coming on about dyslexia and how technology and other forms of support have enabled him to run his successful business.
Indeed, including his wife, Jill.
put the technology in the other forms, help him run his life.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe, I don't know. Can we go there?
Anyway. I don't think we can go there. No. But we're looking forward to speaking to
John
next week.
Okay.
And we have an inspirational insight.
We do. And it's from, talking of creativity, we've chosen Pablo Picasso today. And also talking about children, we thought it was quite apt that his quote, and I have changed it slightly, every child is an artist. The problem is how to remain an artist once he
or she
grows up.
Absolutely.
Although I refuse to grow up, so there we are. I'm going to always be a child.
And both Sue and Francis have both found that art started in their lives, and it's finding a way to reintroduce it as you get older.
Absolutely.
Tricky, yes.
So, folks,
let that child come out.
If you've been inspired by Francis today and want to get an assessment or find out more about dyspraxia, then it's Dyspraxia UK website. If, having listened to Francis talk, you want to come on the air and share your services, your experiences with our listeners, you're more than welcome. Contact
you've
us.
You've maybe got, you know, work with dyspraxia. Maybe you've been assessed and now you've now run a successful business or a marvellous employee.
Absolutely. So get in touch. It's channelradio.co.uk. Our show is Who Cares Wins Radio. We've got lots of ways you can get in touch.
Yep.
But if all else fails, Twitter. Send us a tweet at CaresWins. It's been great talking to you today, Francis.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Francis. Thank
it's been fun. It's been lovely.
I've been snapping photos of you, if you didn't realise.
Yes, you heard that click in the background.
Yeah, yes. I was doing my David Bailey impressions.
I'll put it on my Facebook.
We hope you all have a brilliant week.
Yep.
And
we'll speak to you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Take care.
Temp Network provides reliable temporary staff to your business. Shouldn't Temp Network be supporting your business? Please contact us on 01892 531 777 or visit tempnetwork.co.uk.
This station is powered by Simplecast UK, your one-stop streaming shop. Reliable and affordable. Fast audio streaming on dedicated Unix servers for small to medium internet radio stations. Visit our website at all the W's, simplecast.co.uk. Channel Radio. Sometimes I don't know why.